Welcome into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. That's right. Check out VeritasMedical.com. We have past archive programs and other important information to help you regain control of your health right there at VeritasMedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving week.
Good morning, Wade. We did. How was yours?
It was wonderful. I can't complain.
Good.
I did well and ate a lot of good organic turkey, and
attaboy.
You know, it was wonderful.
Good. Did you shoot that turkey yourself?
I did not. I wish I would have, but I did not.
Well, maybe next year.
But it was really good.
Well, we've got a great show lined up. We've got a super guest that we're honored to have. We're going to try to wean off the COVID topic a little bit, but it's next impossible to do that because the media just keeps bringing it right back around.
The new variant.
Oh, my word. Let me tell you about this new variant. And I haven't done a deep dive, but what I did was I found a document from the WHO. This is November of 2020. And that quote-unquote new variant, Omicron variant, was already identified in multiple countries, November of 2020, according to the WHO, and that document's on our Telegram page, Veritas Medical. You can go check that out. So I'm not too concerned about this quote-unquote new variant. The chair of the South African Medical Association came out this weekend and said, quote, currently there's no reason for panicking as we don't see severely ill patients. So that's interesting. And in general, I'd encourage the audience not to listen to mainstream media. We've talked about that many, many, many times. And really, I would say even health officials and government officials until, here's my standard for when I may listen to them again, when there's confession and repentance over these following topics, they need to confess that the virus does not spread asymptomatically. That's number one. Number two, they need to stop testing asymptomatic people and confess that that was wrong to do all along. They need to confess that natural immunity is robust, complete, and durable. They need to confess and repent for not talking about how COVID-19 is easily treatable at home with early multi-drug treatment. It's been well proven. We've talked to a number of guests that have a track record of treating thousands, tens of thousands of patients. The fifth thing they would need to confess and repent is that the really only therapy they're doing is remdesivir in the hospital, way past the viral replication phase. We talked with Dr. Brian Artis already about that. The sixth thing, that the current leaky COVID shots are obsolete, unsafe, and unfit for human use, would be a good confession. And the virus is not severe for the vast majority of healthy people under the age of 60. So once we can admit to those six things and apologize and ask for forgiveness, then we might can listen to some of these folks again.
Right. Good luck with that, doctor.
Yeah. So the truth has been suppressed in unrighteousness, Scripture talks about. And what I wanted to talk about today was we have so many new listeners because of the COVID debacle, and the truth that has not been expressed in so many circles, that we've attracted a lot of new listeners because people just know something's not right. Something just doesn't make sense. And more every day, people are waking up and their eyes are being opened. And I want to take the opportunity to open their eyes in regards to the number one killer in America. 600,000 plus every year will die from heart disease. And we've had Dr. Chris Kenobi on the show before, who talks about the first recorded heart attack in American medical literature was in 1912 when there was one. So basically this is a modern disease, a modern epidemic that's swept across our country over the past 100 years. And that the current therapies that are offered that are medicines, primarily chasing cholesterol via statins, and stents and bypasses are very, very minimally effective, if at all, and the cost-benefit ratio, risk-benefit ratio doesn't really fit on that either. So we want to get into that. And I've asked Dr. Jack Wolfson of Wolfson Integrative Cardiology to join us today to talk about and shed some light on this history of coronary artery disease and heart disease in general and the failure of conventional medicine to address root causes. However, because of COVID, and I know a lot of people are still just dialed into COVID, and we will be too a little bit on this show, so we're going to cover a lot of territory. In regards to heart disease or heart inflammation, we'll say. Everyone's heard pericarditis, myocarditis. I don't think it's been in the news much, but Franklin Graham, who told his 7 million Facebook followers that they should get that shot and that Jesus would want them to get that shot, was dismissed out of Mayo Clinic, I believe it was last week, after a surgery for pericarditis. And certainly they did not link that to the shot, I'm sure. But Dr. Wolfson, I think, might be able to shed some light on if there maybe is a linkage and what he's seeing in his practice, because he is a cardiologist. So Dr. Jack Wolfson of Wolfson Integrative Cardiology, which is a full-service, natural, holistic cardiology practice that helps people from all over the world. Dr. Wolfson, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the intro, Dr. Ben. It's a pleasure to be on. And, you know, certainly these are tumultuous times, and let the truth be heard.
Amen, brother. Well, I appreciate you standing for truth, and you've stood for truth for a long time. We first interviewed you, I think, it was 3 or 4 years ago. Of course, we're in a totally different world today, which we can talk about. But I wanted to give you some time to shed some light and educate our listeners in regards to this emergency use authorized experimental gene therapy medical procedure that they're calling a vaccine, but in no way meets any definition, traditional historical definition of vaccine. But this gene therapy injection and the potential cardiac adverse events, enlighten us on your thoughts about that and what you're seeing in your practice.
Yeah, you know, I think that the way you put it there, you almost, you know, the way you spoke it, you said experimental use. And then you said changed it back to use. And when you said experimental use, I immediately thought of euthanasia, on how essentially you would you know, terminate someone's life, you know, on purpose, you know, with the use of, you know, some kind of pharmaceutical, you know, AKA end of life, you know, kind of therapy, if you will. But, you know, I don't know if I would go that extreme with this particular you know, shot or jab or vaccine, as they commonly, you know, claim. But, you know, that being said, you know, it's something that is experimental. It is something that has not gone through any form of rigorous testing whatsoever. For anyone who would be, you know, again, on a call with us, if Anthony Fauci was on a call with us, he would have to say, yeah, no, we've got no intermediate-term data, we've got no long-term data on this. The short-term data that we have, you know, really is not very impressive at all, certainly when you look at the two studies that were published in the New England Journal of Medicine back in September, and both the Pfizer and the Moderna shots studied in thousands and thousands of patients. When they looked at the data from 6 months, there was no lives saved from either Pfizer or Moderna. Now, of course, if you listen to mainstream media, they'll talk about the hundreds of lives, the hundreds of thousands of lives that are being saved. But when you actually look at the study data in both the placebo group, which, of course, did not get any kind of active therapy, and then in the actual active group, which got the active shot, there were zero lives saved. So once you kind of, again, start to dive into all of this data, you can see really that the emperor, you know, has no clothes.
Right. And as we look more closely at all-cause mortality, which is what I was kind of preaching all last year, let's track all-cause mortality. And as we do that with vaccinated versus unvaccinated, I'm putting those in quotations, but out of Israel, now the UK both, specifically I saw in the UK this weekend, the all-cause, death from any cause, was about double in those who had received the shot versus those who had not. So that would, that's evidence to something's going on from an adverse events standpoint, not even mentioning VAERS and the huge number. I think I just saw the European VAERS equivalent was like at 31,000 deaths reported now. And of course, we know there is an underreporting factor. But a lot of those are cardiac-related adverse events and deaths. So can you speak to that all-cause mortality, which, you know, in that original data you're talking about, all-cause mortality was higher in the those that received the shot. But what are your thoughts on all-cause and cardiac in particular?
Yeah, well, you know, all cause is really something that we always need to look at, because even if you look at some of the old and original data on statin drugs for cholesterol, for alleged heart attack and prevention, death prevention, when you look at the all-cause mortality on those studies, in fact, there was no benefit to the statin drugs. It appears, according to their literature, that heart attacks were mildly reduced, cardiac death was mildly reduced, but then you started seeing that death from cancer and other causes were increased. So yes, when you look at the all-cause mortality on some of those original statin trials, the West of Scotland trial, AFCAPS, TECCAPS, which was done actually down in Texas, some of the original major statin trials were done in the state of Texas, you can see actually that overall mortality was not changed at all. And that's always the main arbiter because, you know, again, if you come up with data saying, well, you know, this particular shot or vaccine reduces, death from alleged virus by 90%, but there was a 90% increase in mortality from other causes, and now you're not saving any lives. So, as it pertains to what I've seen in my practice, again, from people who did get the shot, maybe they didn't hear my message about natural health and wellness and about how your body is built to work in combination with nature. When you give the body what it needs, take away what it doesn't. The people in my practice and beyond, we've heard of two strokes, a heart attack, cardiac arrest, lots of cases of atrial fibrillation, abnormal heart rhythms after the shots, Bell's palsy. One gentleman is a patient of mine. He's a little bit over 60 years old. Mysteriously, his testosterone was cut in half. And I went through all the questioning with him. I didn't automatically, in fact, I didn't even know that he had had the shot. I was surprised to find out that he did. So I went through all the different questions, with him, any kind of change in his diet and his lifestyle. Did they put a cell phone tower right behind his house or, something different? And then we got to the shot standpoint. He said, yeah, I got the shot. And now his testosterone's cut in half. So I said, well, maybe it was from the shot. And he emailed back a few days later. He said he spoke with his urologist, and the urologist doesn't think that it's from the shot. And, of course, I said, well, what does he think it's from? And there was no answer, to any other ideas as opposed to, well, it just kind of happened. So, we're seeing lots of different things, coming up, and it's certainly scary times. Fortunately, the majority of my patients did get the message about, again, giving the body what it needs, take away what it doesn't, and that's going to be our salvation.
Right. Well, I can tell you here locally, I was talking to a colleague last week that I won't name names because of the current environment, but he had a perfectly healthy 62-year-old pilot. And, I mean, pilots are some of the healthiest folks in our society. And he'd always passed his flight physicals with flying colors. No previous medical history at all. Had a huge stroke. And the workup's totally negative. There's no other reason for the stroke besides the shot he was forced to get. And then had a young lady, 26-year-old, same thing, stroke, with zero risk factors, no family history, no risk factors. I've heard from a number of people who, family members or friends, just sudden cardiac death or heart attack, within a window of time, within days after the injection, and of course their doctors in the ER don't correlate the two. It's just random. It just happened to be this way. They would have had the heart attack anyways. So there's a lot of not seeing because you don't look or don't want to see it. But we had a 40-something-year-old patient whose spouse didn't wake up off the couch, fell asleep on the couch that night, never came to bed. The next morning was dead on the couch. And then you see all these athletes. I think last count I saw is something like 75 or 80, maybe 90. These are soccer players, rugby players, cricket, tennis, basketball, football, all around the world. And I think a lot of people have seen these videos, if you're not on mainstream media, just falling over, just collapsing. So can you talk about, myocarditis and pericarditis. Tell our listeners what exactly, what is that? How often do you see that? We had a local ultrasound tech who does echocardiograms on people state that he had seen 10 myocarditises in the past 6 months, and in his previous 10-year career, he'd only seen one. And so talk about the myocarditis and also the mortality rate on that over a 5 or 10-year period of time, if you would.
Yeah, most certainly. So myocarditis, or when you end any kind of, medical term, with the word itis or the suffix I-T-I-S, that imply that inflammation. That's Greek for inflammation. So when you talk about myo, muscle, card, heart, itis, inflammation, so it literally is, heart muscle inflammation. And when your heart muscle is inflamed, there's been a variety of kind of alleged causes to that in the past, and one has always been, well, it was some kind of, that led your heart to be inflamed, when in fact there rarely is any evidence ever produced that there was any kind of virus, that did it. And I think a lot of times it is kind of unknown as to what it was, but probably often, related to pharmaceutical usage. The pharmaceutical led to some kind of inflammation in the muscles, and in this particular situation, heart muscle. And with the COVID shots, we are certainly hearing lots in VAERS, but also in mainstream medical literature about a lot of young boys, age, 15 to 24, having myocarditis as measured by enzymes in the blood. So you can measure the inflammation and the damage in the blood. And then the follow-up to that would be their explanation that, well, most of these young boys recovered, quite well with no sequelae or no, problems afterwards. Well, the problem is that we have, again, it's very short-term follow-up. So if you see that someone's inflammation has resolved after, after a couple weeks, how do we know what that means for the long term? And it really has no research on that whatsoever. What it means for these young boys or anyone who has myocarditis, heart muscle inflammation, what happens in the long term? Does it increase heart attack risk? Does it increase heart failure risk? Atrial fibrillation risk? Does it increase cardiac death risk? So the answer is, we don't really know, what it's doing. But, whenever you inject something unnatural into the body, there is going to be some form of response. Now, pharmaceutical companies and doctors will say, well, that's what you want. You want to generate some kind of immune response, so that's how you know it's working. But the problem is, again, the immune system will start to, attack or inflame whatever it wants to. And in the individual person, who knows? Because, again, even if it's been studied on 4,000 people, it hasn't been studied on you. So, kind of all bets are off. But it's certainly very scary. And we're seeing cases of it. And some of these young boys, they haven't recovered. And again, what's going to happen to their, future, ability to exercise or athletic, or again, long term, we just have no idea.
Right. And I don't want to put you on the spot on a particular case like the Franklin Graham case, and I don't know the details of it, but what I heard was is the pericardium, the sac around the heart, was inflamed, and they did a surgical procedure to relieve that. So in general, if someone had that diagnosis and had that procedure to try to relieve some symptoms, long-term prognosis for something like that, do you have any data or educated guess on that?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with his particular case, but, certainly when someone has pericarditis, which now is again, we've got that term itis, and that stands for inflammation. So now you've got inflammation of the sac that surrounds the heart. And because of that, it leads to a lot of irritation of the heart muscle itself. Depending on the procedure that they did, maybe they removed part of the pericardium, maybe they were able to, remove the material. But again, the pericardium exists for a reason, and it was given to us by however we got here, God or evolution or a combination thereof, that again, why that heart sac exists, and it does have a purpose. And now once you have inflammation of it, you can have restrictions. So now actually it it's a sac around the heart, and if that sac now becomes inflamed, it can actually constrict on the heart, leading to congestive heart failure and cardiac death. And again, you know, you cannot if you're a mainstream doctor, you cannot even question the current vaccine, COVID shot paradigm, because it's almost like career suicide for you to do that. It really is. You can't question this stuff, because of, how your peers and societies or governing bodies would come down on you. Suppression of health information is certainly at an all-time high. It's always been bad, certainly since you and I last spoke a few years ago. And if I speak out against statins, or if I highlight all the problems with aspirin, where you talk about blood pressure drugs, or again, diabetes drugs, or cancer drugs, whatever it may be, the amount of people that come at you for destroying the common rhetoric is really astounding.
Right. Yeah. It's on full display now. And again, that's part of the motivation behind inviting you on the show, so we can talk more about some of that historical manipulation and suppression of the truth in regards to chronic diseases, not just infectious disease like COVID, from heart disease to cancer to diabetes. So I think it might be a good time to take a little break. And then when we come back, we'll shift gears a little bit and talk about how we got off track with this whole heart disease, heart diet hypothesis, saturated fat and cholesterol, and just that whole bucket of worms. So, Dr. Wolfson, how can people follow you? What's the best way to find you and follow your work?
Yeah, most certainly. If anybody wants, I have an Amazon best-selling book. It's called The Paleo Cardiologist, The Natural Way to Heart Health. Head on over to freeheartbook.com, and we'll send you a free copy. All you do is pay shipping. freeheartbook.com. And again, it's all the truth about heart disease, how to avoid medical doctors, cardiologists, how to avoid pharmaceuticals, and actually achieve the 100-year heart.
That's awesome. I love that goal to teach people how to avoid the heart doctor. We want to teach people how to avoid every single doctor, actually, for sure, avoid the ICU and hospital and all that. But you are equipped. Your body's made to be well. As Dr. Wolfson has said, give the body what it needs and avoid what it doesn't, and it should function like it was supposed to. All these chronic diseases everyone's dealing with, including 54% of our children now have a chronic disease. These are all new, modern, quote-unquote modern, as Dr. Weston A. Price said, modern disease because of modern diet and modern stressors, modern toxicities, for sure. All right, so we will be back with Dr. Jack Wolfson after this break. Y'all stick with us. I'm Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
And welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows. Other important information to help you regain control of your health. You can certainly find us right there at VeritasMedical.com.
Thank you, Wade. We are back. We're with Dr. Jack Wolfson of Wolfson Integrative Cardiology, which is a full-service natural holistic cardiology practice that helps people from all over the world. You know, people ask me all the time, why did I go into this more holistic and alternative medicine? I was trained as a conventional family practitioner. Well, the real answer is God divinely interrupted my plans in my life and put me more on His trajectory, which was the truth. And the truth is, the body's designed to function just like your vehicle. We get it, actually, with our vehicles. You buy a brand new truck or tractor or whatever around here, all these farmers, you expect that vehicle to function. You want to get out in the cotton field and harvest that cotton, and you expect it to function just like the John Deere engineer who designed it planned for it to function. And if you give it what it needs, keep all your fluid levels the right way, the air in the tire the right way, all the different, hydraulic fluid and oil and transmission fluid and the diesel and et cetera, it will just do what it's supposed to do. You don't expect for it to be in the shop all the time or breaking down all the time or needing to add an extensive and expensive number of supplemental chemical synthetic inputs into these machines for them to function. Well, the same with the body. Give it what it needs, avoid what it doesn't. We've talked about in the past Dr. Weston A. Price, the dentist out of Cleveland, Ohio, back in the 1920s, 1930s. He started to see an uptick in his practice of heart disease and arthritis and cancer and all the different itises. As Dr. Wolfson mentioned, itis just means inflammation. So arthritis, colitis, prostatitis, diverticulitis, you name it. All these itises were starting to increase in his practice. So he traveled the world for 20 years and documented in 14 different people groups around the world where there were no itises and malignancies and heart disease and all that. And what he noted, the difference between the tribes or the villages that had modern disease creeping in and the ones that did not, was they were eating modern food versus their ancestral way of eating. It was that simple. And fast forward 100 years, and it's still that simple. That is the issue. In fact, there was a review article in the American College of Cardiology. This was, I think, August of 20. It may have been 19. But anyways, a review article on saturated fat. And does it really cause heart disease? And their conclusion, I'm paraphrasing, was basically no. There's no correlation. And in fact, any correlation we see has to do with the processing of the saturated fat by man when we get in there, muck it up, and do stuff to it, like homogenize and pasteurize our good, healthy milk, for instance. But so I want to go back with Dr. Wolfson, go back to those 100 years ago or thereabouts, and how did we get so off track? And why does everyone think it's cholesterol that causes heart disease? And why is everyone on these statins? So, Dr. Wolfson, the floor is yours. If you could go back historically and share with our listeners as much or as little as you want to try to set the stage for where we got off course with this number one killer in America today.
Well, setting it up like that, and I think that, you know, the first thing that I try and teach people, again, is what is cholesterol? Because if we mention the word cholesterol, all of the listeners on here, what kind of is conjured up in your mind when we say the word cholesterol? And, of course, most heart attack or stroke or, again, the need for bypass surgery, you're thinking about this big piece of fat swimming around your body and clogging up arteries. Well, the reality is that the human body makes cholesterol for a reason. All animals on planet Earth, their bodies make cholesterol for a reason as well, actually for just a multitude of reasons, including, for example, vitamin D comes from a cholesterol molecule. The sun hits, cholesterol coursing through the skin turns it into vitamin D. Cholesterol is necessary for our hormones. Cholesterol is necessary for digestion. It, you know, again, it's made in the liver and put into the gallbladder and bile to help us digest our food. Cholesterol is actually part of the cell membrane or the fence that surrounds every cell. And it is inside of that, you know, arena. Once we understand how important cholesterol is and how we cannot live without it, life cannot live without cholesterol, then again, we start to, you know, realize its importance. Now, why was it vilified really since the, you know, 1950s and stuff like that, and along with saturated fat? Well, yeah, that kind of goes back to the story of Ansel Keys and his sponsors at that time of his work, which was, you know, the food industry. So instead of getting a coconut oil, you know, rich candy bar that was expensive because you'd have to import the coconut oil, why not create some kind of false narrative around the dangers of saturated fat and the dangers of things like coconut oil in order to promote partially hydrogenated soybean oil, for example, that instead of costing a dollar, costs a penny. So now, of course, all these candy manufacturers, food manufacturers, big ag, big industry, big box, you know, foods, they're the ones who essentially sponsored the false narrative again on the dangers of things like saturated fat and cholesterol in foods, and then here we are to this day where again we've got heart disease as the number one killer worldwide, despite the fact that such has been, you know, cut back on saturated fats and again promoting the soy, corn, wheat, all these different cheaper foods as being healthy, and unfortunately it's the people who have suffered. So if we look at, again, you know, saturated fat, and there's so many American College of Cardiology, again, even back, really, you know, there were people that were contrary to Ansel Keys' recommendations even back, you know, then, you know, Professor John Yudkin, you know, was against what Keys was saying. But again, Keys got in bed with the government politicians in the United States, and really they promoted his work because, again, it was all just controlled by Big Ag. And, you know, we need to embrace cholesterol. We need to embrace cholesterol-rich foods. We need to understand that seafood and animal products, like especially, you know, specifically grass-fed liver, you know, healthy animals and their organs, that's the healthiest food on the planet, and there's nothing else that's even close. There's no kale or chard or certainly wheat or oatmeal that is possibly in the same league as you know, wild seafood and grass-fed animal products.
Right. And I think this is a good time to mention a quote of a book called Fat and Cholesterol Don't Cause Heart Attacks. And Dr. George Mann, who was a former co-director of the Framingham study, which the general public probably doesn't know the Framingham, but physicians sure do, and I know there are physicians that listen to this show. And so I'd encourage them to go get the book. But here's the quote from the co-director of the Framingham study, which Framingham's a little town up in Massachusetts, and there's tons of medical data has come out of this town because they've tracked pretty much the whole town for decades now. In regards to heart disease, they've concluded lots of things, but here's the quote. "The greatest scientific deception of the century, perhaps of any century," and that's nutritionist George Mann, the co-director of the study, talking about this lipid heart hypothesis that cholesterol causes heart attacks. So, like you said, there's people have come out against this since the beginning and to this day, but those voices just aren't heard. They're suppressed, similar to what's going on with COVID right now and the 500 doctors out there that are treating it, but they're being suppressed. So, when it comes to cholesterol, Dr. Wolfson, two questions here. Do you measure it? And if you do, you know, how do you measure it? And then can you speak to inflamed cholesterol versus not inflamed cholesterol? And maybe that's the real issue.
Yes, most certainly. When we look back to, as you said, the Framingham data, and another trial that came out in the 1970s was called Mr. Fit. And what they found in Mr. Fit was that there was a sweet spot for total cholesterol between 160 and 260. So if you went above 260 of a total cholesterol, you had an increased risk of dying. If you went below 160, you had an increased risk of dying. So what we want to do is we want to find the perfect cholesterol for each one of us. And mainstream cardiology would have us believe that the best cholesterol level is the lowest possible, and that obviously would be nothing further from the truth. That is all just pharmaceutical rhetoric fed into the mouths and the minds of the cardiologists. Again, you know, cardiologists are terrible at reading. They're very good at listening to pharmaceutical reps and going to events that are sponsored by Big Pharma that, again, push the pharma agenda. But, you know, George Mann, Framingham, Mr. Fit, we know that cholesterol is actually very important, and the sweet spot is 160 to 260. So it's kind of a bad predictor overall as far as cardiovascular risk. So when I measure, instead of measuring cholesterol, although most people want to hear what their total cholesterol is, you know, you're correct. It's not a very important number, especially when the range is so big, 160 to 260. So we want to measure things like different particle numerical sizes. And since 2004, Dr. Salim Youssef out of Duke published a report about measuring a ratio or calculating a ratio of what's called ApoB to ApoA. And the lower that ratio, the lower the cardiovascular risk and lower overall mortality risk. So again, you want to have that ratio checked, ApoB to ApoA. And then answer your other question, you know, as far as, you know, damaged LDL particles. That's what, you know, LDL has a purpose, right? LDL, unfortunately, has been called the bad cholesterol, and HDL has been called the good cholesterol. But in fact, both of those exist for a reason. LDL exists for a reason. HDL exists for a reason. And we don't want those particles to be damaged, inflamed, or what's called oxidized. And we can measure oxidized LDL particles, and we measure them, of course, in all of our patients. So So we want to make sure that the LDLs are not damaged, oxidized. If we think about the LDL as like this bus that takes off from the liver and it is carrying passengers around the body, and passengers, of course, are things like CoQ10 and triglycerides and cholesterol, other fat-soluble vitamins, other things we don't even know about yet. And this bus delivers the passengers where they're needed around the body. So we want to have LDL, but we don't want to have these damaged buses. We want to have these large, buoyant, fluffy buses taken off. And again, we don't want to have these damaged ones. And that's what we need to measure if we're looking to really measure risk. Now, the good news is when you eat the right foods, when you live the right lifestyle, when you avoid the environmental toxins and pollutants as much as possible, when you do all these healthy strategies, your body just, again, it starts to work, and the numbers look good. And of course, there are evidence-based supplements that can help supplement the healthy lifestyle. But the statin drugs, again, are an abysmal failure, and they've led to millions of people dying needlessly. Same thing with aspirin. There's definitely a better way.
Amen. I agree 100%. I love that damaged bus analogy that you give. Do you find in your practice, because we do measure those particle sizes, the big fluffy versus small dense, we measured oxy-LDL. What I found over time, over the years, was there was such a correlation. If we just got a basic cholesterol panel and looked at the triglyceride to HDL ratio, you know, if someone came in pretty standard American, eating lots of vegetable oil and carbs and sugar, and then they started changing their diet and flipping their diet to more ancestral, we would see a dramatic drop in triglycerides and the elevation of HDL to a beautiful ratio, and always those LDL particles would flip to normal. And it was so consistent that pretty much we just use it if we're trying to be, you know, economical and save some money for the patient, because a basic cholesterol panel is so inexpensive. Just following that triglyceride HDL ratio seems to correlate beautifully with all the other particles, oxy-LDL and other particles normalizing. Do you find that also?
Oh, certainly. I think that, you know, again, when you live the right lifestyle, the numbers invariably look good. And therefore, you know, one could say, well, I'm not going to measure anything at all, just following, you know, nature and stuff. And I don't have a problem, you know, with that approach. But again, I think to your point, you know, whether, you know, you're looking at a phenomenal marker, actually, triglycerides are just a linear, the increase in triglycerides is correlated with cardiovascular events. So for every kind of number you go up, you know, from 60 to 70 to 80, as the number goes up, so does your risk. So the lower the triglycerides, the better, as it pertains to, you know, again, health and wellness. And again, what elevates triglycerides are all the, you know, carbs, processed foods, simple sugars, alcohol, all those things can increase triglycerides. And on the flip side, they also tend to, you know, lower HDL. So I think that is a good character that we can certainly use. ApoB and ApoA, that in particular really isn't that expensive. Even if you were to kind of look at the cash price from places like LabCorp or Quest, I think you're talking, you know, in those, you know, probably $15-$20 for those particular tests.
If you were going to get just one test, if someone limited you to just one test and across the board, whether it be A1C, the 3-month blood sugar average, or a homocysteine or a triglyceride or this ratio, ApoB and ApoA, I mean, this is really putting a cardiologist on the spot to say you can only do one thing, one test, but do you find one that's, is it that ratio, ApoB to ApoA, or what's a one test if that's what you're limited to that you would pick?
No, I mean, the one test I would check would be an hsCRP, measuring inflammation in the body. Inflammation is a much, much, much bigger risk factor, much, much bigger predictor of cardiovascular events, heart mortality, mortality overall. Whenever there's inflammation, that's always bad. You got to find the cause of inflammation. So it would definitely be that hsCRP. You know, I'm a huge fan of eating seafood, and seafood is the healthiest food on the planet. Talking about sardines, anchovies, wild salmon, shellfish, people can always come back with some, oh, what about the mercury? What about the toxins? Again, everything is toxic, you know, these days as far as, you know, pollution on the planet. But again, seafood remains the single healthiest source. We talked before about the cell membrane, and the cell membrane does have cholesterol, but the biggest thing inside of the cell membrane is fish oil. And it's not about taking fish oil supplements. It's about eating the seafood to increase omega-3s in the cell membranes. So that's another test I like to check on people to confirm, what their diet is and how they're not eating enough seafood. But I think we really, Dr. Ben, the best thing about the test is that it gets people back on track. It shows people, hey, listen, this is objective evidence that you're in trouble. This is objective evidence that you're at risk. And you get all this information, and hopefully that'll be motivational for you to start making changes.
Right. I agree 100%. I'd say 90% of our labs are more for motivation and education in the patient. So say you've got a patient who's changed their diet, changed their lifestyle, and they're pretty committed to it, and you prove it with these kind of tests. What if the hsCRP, that inflammatory marker, is staying elevated? Is there a list in your mind that you start to go down to go hunt for, which again, this would be rare because most patients, when they change the diet and their stress and their exercise and all that, they'll just normalize these factors. But what are some of those outliers where you might go hunt for something else if they're staying inflamed?
Well, I think that's, the beauty of kind of how you and myself and so many others practice is that we always keep going, looking for the why. And the medical doctors, really, their job is super simple. It's like, okay, well, you're told the cholesterol is high and you've got a family history, which is all BS anyways. Here's the only things that we know. We know statin drugs, we know blood pressure drugs, we know aspirin. That's what we know. Now you get into the, to where we at and becoming doctors of cause, that's where we, really start to, continue the hunt, continue to look, continue to peel back the layers of the onion as far as why these problems exist. So again, we always want to go deeper diving into the diet. We know that poor sleep increases inflammation, lack of sunshine increases inflammation. We know that mental stress increases inflammation in and of itself, anger, anxiety, depression, social isolation are inflammatory for a variety of reasons. We look at, these environmental toxins, of which, unfortunately, are kind of infinite. And that's where testing comes in to look at some of these different exposures, whether it's mold mycotoxins or it's pesticides or phthalates or parabens or VOCs. Could 5G, could electromagnetics lead to inflammation or an inability of the body to balance this pro-oxidative stress. So we're always kind of peeling back, on all that, looking at dental infections are obviously a big cause of inflammation. So continuing to do a deep dive, continuing with the questions, continuing to always look. And then again, that's sometimes where maybe evidence-based supplements can come in to kind of quiet down some of that inflammation. But I think usually we can get to the root cause and therefore really not need anything else extra.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that. And, of course, I knew you were going to say that because I've followed you and I've read your book and I know how you think. And I want the listeners to really take note that we've got a few minutes left in the show. And we haven't talked about supplements this whole show. Dr. Wolfson mentioned briefly twice evidence-based supplements. You can't supplement your way to health. So we are going to talk about a couple supplements here at the end. But I want the listener again to take note that it's all about the diet and the lifestyle. What did Dr. Wolfson say after I said, all right, the diet's good. What else could drive inflammation? Lack of sunshine. Something that simple. Get out and get some sunshine. The mental stress, anger, unforgiveness. It is these basic things that most people kind of gloss over, or they just think, couldn't be that. Let me go to the supplement store and get a pile full of supplements. Yeah, that's not how it works. You cannot supplement your way to health. And I'm not saying not to test supplement. I supplement every day where my diet's deficient, but it's supplemental to a healthy diet and a peaceful lifestyle and exercise and sunshine and all these basic things. things that go a mile. I mean, if you could put the benefits that you get from just not sitting all day long, if you could put those benefits into a pill, it'd be a blockbuster. It'd be a, you know, knock it out of the park, multi-gazillion dollar bestseller. So these are free and they're natural things, and they're way better than anything you could put in your mouth from a pill. All that being said, though, where the diet is deficient, or there's just some lingering and ongoing inflammation, or maybe you're in a stressful situation that you're working to get out of. So there's, you know, we meet people where they're at. And if where you're at is highly inflamed and you're working on getting the diet and lifestyle change, but you need some Band-Aid therapy is one way to think about it even, or you just need some ongoing supplementation to deal with a little lingering inflammation because of a toxic world we live in. So I encourage you to always keep digging down to the root, like Dr. Wolfson just said. But when we do need to do some supplementation, Dr. Wolfson, what are some of your favorites specifically related to inflammation and heart disease, or even AFib or anything in the cardiac realm?
Well, one of my favorite supplements certainly is berberine, B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E. The you know, Chinese and Asia, they've been studying the supplement for a very, very long time, over 75 years. There's thousands and thousands of articles in the medical literature. One of my favorites, of course, because I do see so many people with heart rhythm problems, including atrial fibrillation, is they're really done on berberine versus amiodarone. And amiodarone is the most effective drug for atrial fibrillation, but it's also the most toxic. So they compared berberine to amiodarone, and after a 12-month follow-up, they found that the berberine group was just as effective as the amiodarone group, less the toxicity. So berberine is fantastic for modification, for blood sugar. It actually has been shown to prevent amyloid plaque deposition in the brain, so it may have a role fighting Alzheimer's disease and neurologic diseases like Parkinson's. And then actually, berberine has been studied against immune support against viruses and certainly against bacteria, against fungus, and it works very well for that. So berberine is like that super, you know, Swiss Army knife supplement. I love that. Definitely check into information on that. And again, I would tell, you know, as far as kind of vitamins and like supplements are at right now, what I'm usually telling people is going for an organ supplement using either, you know, grass-fed elk or grass-fed bison like we sell on our website from Tribe Vitamins. But then there's also, there's a lot of different supplements companies that are doing the organ products. So if you're not going to eat liver, or you have trouble sourcing, you know, good quality liver, or, you know, again, just having difficulty with it, you know, then I think some of these organ supplements are absolutely fantastic. As it pertains to fish oil, not a huge fish oil supplementer, especially, again, because we can get it from the, you know, from the fish and even the seafood. And then finally, of course, magnesium is always a classic. But don't forget about potassium. A lot of people, when we test their intracellular potassium levels, they're low. That leads to high blood pressure, leads to heart rhythm, you know, disorders, sudden cardiac death. So don't forget about the potassium.
Okay, awesome. Well, we are about out of time. Real quick again, where's the best way to follow you, to get your book? Just tell our audience again.
Yeah, sure thing, Dr. Bennett. Again, I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate everything you're doing to spread the truth. Again, doing what we do, it's difficult to say the least, and it's frankly, you know, scary at times because, again, you know, thinking that there's so many people in the world that are against our message, there's so much power in the world that's against our message, for us to speak out, it certainly is not easy, but we'll keep doing it, and the truth will prevail. I'm very confident. Again, if people want my book, freeheartbook.com. Go check it out.
All right. Awesome. Everybody, that's Dr. Jack Wolfson, Wolfson Integrative Cardiology. That's WOLFSON, integrativecardiology.com. You can check him out there also. Dr. Wolfson, thank you so much for all you're doing for spreading your message of truth, too, especially in a field of cardiology where there's a lot of money to be had or not had if you get to the root of the problem like we try to do. So thank you again for joining us. We'll have you back another time.
One quick question.
Yep, text line.
The question was, you mentioned potassium per day for high blood pressure. How much do you recommend?
Do you hear that, Dr. Wolfson?
I did not hear that.
Please, oh, my mic was turned down. Sorry. How much potassium per day for high blood pressure is what the texter wanted to know.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, you know, the commonly we're looking at 5 grams in total consumption. So I'm not a big believer in, like, measuring, you know, different food amounts and stuff like that where your intake is. Potassium you can find certainly in animal products. You can also find it in avocado. You can find it in sweet potato, green leafy vegetables, and then, you know, a little bit in bananas. Not a big fan of bananas. So that being said, again, you know, sometimes you got to supplement, you know, between 2 and 3 grams. And there's different powders that are available. It's hard to do it with capsules. I don't recommend capsules. I would get a potassium powder. And just, you know, again, we do have that on our website at the Doctors Wolfson, where we do have a product called Potassium Boost, which is a powder. Maybe, Dr. Ben, you have a different source, but that's what I'd recommend.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you again, Dr. Wolfson. Sure appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, everybody, we will be back next week with another great show. You can check out the archive shows like this one will be on our website. And the previous interview we did with Dr. Wolfson, you can go back and find that from a few years ago at veritasmedical.com. Just click on the resource button and the radio archive page, I believe is what it's called. So spread this message far and wide. We want to educate as many people as possible, and so many people now are more open and their ears and eyes are more open to the truth. And this goes way beyond COVID, so we shouldn't need pharmaceuticals. You were designed to be well, and I encourage everyone to get to the root cause of what's going on. And I just want to end this with we talked about last week with our guest from Revelations chapter 18. This is verse 23. For your merchants were the great ones of the earth, and all the nations were deceived by your pharmakia. Let that sink in for a minute. All right. The truth has been suppressed in unrighteousness, guys. So pray that God show you the truth. And if you earnestly seek, you'll find it. I'm 100% believer in that. And remember, the truth is a person. So it can't be proven with data. It must be discerned spirit to spirit. So go out there and seek that truth. We'll be back next week. Thanks a lot for joining us today. I'm Ben Edwards. You're The Cure.